Hello and welcome to episode number 99 of Two Fat Expats. I'm Kirsty Rice, an Aussie who's based in Qatar, but I'm currently just this minute in Australia.
And I'm Nikki Moffat, an Aussie based in Hamburg, who's currently in Hamburg. As this is episode 99, but really we're back from quite a long summer break. So it might be time to have a little bit of a reintroduction. Kirsty, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't really know what to say to introduce myself, but I guess, are you looking, Nikki, for sort of how we came to be here and who we are, seeing this is season, what season are we?
Five. Welcome to season five.
Okay, so I guess Two Fat Expats started five seasons ago with the lovely Sarah Derrick and I, who were both based in Qatar at the time. I have been an expat now for, heaven forbid, 18 years. My travels have included Indonesia, Malaysia, Libya, Canada, the US, and Qatar, where I currently am. And I'd written a blog for a long time called Four Kids, 20 Suitcases and a Beagle. I wanted to start a podcast. And back then, podcasts were very new. And Sarah and I sat down at the kitchen table and recorded a few episodes and were immediately hooked. So that's kind of the story of why I'm still here. Sarah then moved on. She got a full-time gig elsewhere. She's now moved on to a different country. And I sort of reeled you in, Nikki, because I thought you'd be great to have a chat to, and maybe that's where you could introduce yourself.
Yes, like Kirsty, I've been a long-term expat. We left Australia in 2003, so that makes it 15 years. We've gone to similar continents, but in a different order. So we started in Hong Kong, we went to South Africa, then we went to the US, and now we're in Germany. And yeah, I love podcasts too, and I was a big fan of Kirsty's blog, and I also listened to the Two Fat Expat podcast before I was asked to be a part of it, which I'm obviously thrilled to be here in my third season. Yay!
Do you know, I just realised you've done the collective we, and I've done the whole I went here, I went there. I did forget to mention that I did have four children along the way in four different countries and had a bit of help with that with my husband. Gee. But okay, Nikki, so we're back. We are back after a very long summer hiatus. I always wince a little bit when I say summer because while it is June through to August, it is definitely far from summer here in Australia.
Well, can I say that I have loved the Northern Hemisphere summer. I have loved it more than I have ever loved a summer before because I was so grateful for it. We moved to Germany and promptly had 18 months of rain. And honestly, it was so grim.
All right. So, Nikki, our podcast breaks up into a few different categories. We usually have geographically challenged, where we talk about what it's like to be an expat and what are some of the challenges of maybe having your heart in one place and your head in another, or your half of your family, whether it's your immediate family or distant, or those saying goodbyes to friends. We also talk about expat relationships, whether that's your kids, your partner, your buddies, or establishing new expat relationships along the way. We look at being technically expat, where we look at all the different technical advancements that have helped us along the way and whether it's different apps or whatever technology that might be. We also have a bit of a chat about expat money and how to not blow our dough, as I always say. And my favourite, how are you screwing up your expat child this week, which can sometimes be a cathartic personal story. Or it's looking at other people's advice and things that people have put in place to look after their expat children.
And then we like to throw in an interview with someone who's living in an exotic location or a location that we may have or may have not lived in before with our location. Okay, so I'm going to start off with geographically challenged. I'm going to start off with a post, just a fun post I saw at the beginning of the summer season in our favorite Facebook group, Two Fat Expats, which was written by a European wife and who went to the beach with her American husband and her Americanized children. And three quarters of her family were a little bit horrified by the clothing optional items on the beach. And she thought it was quite hilarious that her husband was so horrified, and to her it was just normal because that's how she grew up.
So is this the first time it had happened in their marriage that she'd taken her top off at the beach and they were with the kid?
Well, I'm not 100% sure, but the post was mainly about how her husband and children were looking at everybody on the beach and feeling a little bit uncomfortable and making commentary about it, whereas for her it was...
I get it. So it wasn't so much she was topless, but it was that other people were topless on the beach and the American side of her children were not dealing with it. And so where was she originally from?
Somewhere in Northern Europe. It was a Northern European beach. It was quite a while ago and I don't have the post to hand, but I just really tickled my fancy. It was just one of those culture clash moments.
And what were some of the other things that people were saying?
Yeah, so people were talking about their similar experiences. So being from, you know, or even when you live in one country and you're used to one way of, you know, seeing things and then you move to another country, it immediately sort of feels a little bit fresher and more, not uncomfortable, but you just sort of forget and think about it. So people were talking about their own experiences with their mixed culture families or the fact that, you know, how that when they first moved to Europe, they were quite horrified and now they love it, or, you know, the other way around as well, I guess.
Oh, look, I remember that from just moving from Libya to Canada, because I know, you know, Nikki, growing up in Australia, we're quite beachy as well. And while there's no way my mother was ever going topless in downtown Renmark, but she but we were definitely you know, get your bathers off, put your, you know, fresh clothes on. And as little kids it was no big deal. And I was very much the same with my kids. You know, once you'd finished swimming, if they were little tiny kids, you'd just pull their bathers off and put their clothes on, and, you know, before you hopped in the car. And I remember, you know, when we were in Libya, because there was a huge Italian population as well, and we had a lot of French friends and, you know, Northern European friends. It all felt very relaxed, sort of poolside. When we got to Canada, I remember taking the kids to an indoor swim centre for swimming lessons, and you know, took the kids' bathers off and to put their clothes on. And it was suggested to me by someone that I really might want to take my children into the change rooms to do that. That you wouldn't do it out and about. And I remember just being quite blown away from it. And it's amazing how times have changed, because I wonder if we are getting a bit more like that in Australia now too. You know, there's been so much more awareness about people taking photos of kids and people looking at kids, and, you know, but I just remember at the time feeling that I was surprised by that culture shock.
And, you know, the funniest thing to me about that story was when you said when we moved to Libya to Canada, and I put in my head what I pre-thought you were going to say then, and I did not think that it would be more liberal in Libya than in Canada.
Yeah, I know. It's funny, isn't it? It's really interesting, like that thing with kids.
Yeah, I think I might have told this story before on the podcast. I can't remember. I tell a lot of stories all the time. But when we moved to America and we went to the pool at our neighborhood, my daughter was 5 and she was just swimming in bikini bottoms. And someone came over to me and said, you know, I know you're new. And I said, yes, yes. And she said, where have you moved from? And I told her, and she said, look, I don't know what it's like there, but here it's not acceptable for a little girl to swim without a top.
Wow.
That was quite confronting, you know, like, great that she came and told me, and I said, oh, okay, thanks for letting me know. But it was just, you know, my first interaction with her, and that's what she came to tell me. So,
yeah.
And that's in a private pool where no one, you know, no one can come in and take photos or anything. That's just purely a cultural thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's and it was something I wasn't aware of in North America. Do you know that there would that would be a thing? And I remember a Canadian friend saying to me, you know, yeah, but that's just because you're Australian and you all take your clothes off in Australia. Like I've seen movies of those beaches, and I'm sure I saw an interview with Elle Macpherson and she said everybody's topless in Australia. It was like, oh, no, 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 no. Okay, so Nikki, expat relationships. I guess because I'm still home and, you know, you and I sort of caught up yesterday quickly to book in a time to do the podcast today, and I was telling you that something, and this is probably the in the forefront of my mind because I'm just about to leave. You know, I'm only here for another couple of nights and then I'm back to Qatar. And after this, you know, long break at home, it's really apparent to me that there are really important people in my life that I just haven't made the time for, which I don't know if there are other people that do the same thing, but I tend to do this where the people that you know will, I guess, forgive you or put up with you, and you suddenly get to, oh, my God, I leave in 3 days and I still haven't seen, you know, my lovely, gorgeous auntie who I absolutely adore, but I've, you know, I've pushed and tried to fit in other people and haven't done it. So I ended up having this fantastic, thank God, phone call for about 2 hours yesterday with my auntie because I knew I wasn't going to, you know, get to her house to see her. And she said, oh, that's fine, you know, it's good. Like we had a really decent chat. But I was also thinking, you know, there's two things I think that happen when you get home. That one where you run out of time to see people, but also that slight undercurrent of narkiness where you realize you're making all the effort to see someone and that they've made absolutely no effort to see you. So I've also had this other situation where I've realized 3 times I've, you know, gone out of my way to catch up with someone, and it's occurred to me, if I wasn't making all of this effort, I'm not sure if you would be. Do you know, would I not have seen you if I hadn't made the effort? It's just one of those weird things with being an expat and maintaining friendships, isn't it?
It is. It's very difficult. And just having said that, you know, the people that gave the farewell speech at our farewell party in South Africa, they're leaving South Africa after 10 years. And we didn't even know until we saw pictures from their farewell party. And you know, so, but there's still people that we think, oh, you know, if we went and saw them, we'd pick up just where we left off yesterday. But, and then you think, but there's so much about their life that we just don't know. Like they've already packed their whole house, moved it into a boat and sent it across the world, and now they're having a party, but we didn't realize they were leaving.
Yes.
It's just one of those things where you just, like you think social media keeps you in touch and, you know, all that kind of stuff, but it's not really the same as those, you know, deep connections, you know, having an hour and 40 minutes on the phone, that kind of thing.
Yeah. No.
Sometimes it's a false sense of security almost.
That is it. It is a false sense of security where, yeah, you're almost, you're getting the filtered part of their social life, but yeah, you're not getting the nuts and bolts of what's really going on behind the scenes. And yeah, the fact that you, someone that you just feel so deeply about, you can miss that their sister has died, or you know, yeah, or something so deep, because you know that's not something they're putting out there on Facebook or you know tracking on Instagram. And it's not until later you go, wow, you know, I feel like I'm still so up to date with you, and I feel like you know those little likes and comments and whatever are keeping us connected, but I'm missing really deep parts of your life. Yeah. You're right. I don't usually worry about the whole, you know, oh, I didn't catch up with that person or that person's not trying hard enough with me. I have, you know, within all these years of writing and podcasting and whatever about expat life, it's definitely something I'm well aware of where other people talk about their friendships. I get to come home a lot, so I always feel a little bit spoiled, you know, but I guess, yeah, I don't know why it's hit me this time, why it's sort of got up my bum, I guess, a bit more about, you know, making the effort. Oh, it's hard. And I mean, Nikki, I guess that's one thing I'd love to know from you, because your summer holidays have been spent in Europe, while like you're an Australian living in Hamburg and you've done some travel throughout Europe. Do you feel at all, would you have liked to have come back to Australia, or how do you stay connected with your Australian friends, or do you have less Australian friends than you used to? How do you deal with it?
Well, I don't know if that's a good point. I after living in the States and going back to Australia in winter, I decided I don't really like that idea. So I'm okay with not going back in winter. But, to be honest, this summer one of my good Australian friends, in fact, a bridesmaid from our wedding, came to Europe, and I went and spent a week with her in France, which was really fun and amazing. But I do kind of feel like that I am, well, like I just said before about our friends in South Africa, I feel that there are loads of people I still feel connected to. You know, I message them on Facebook separately to commenting on their posts, et cetera, or, you know, WhatsApp them from time to time. But then I see things and hear things like you've just talked about, and I think, oh, am I really that connected? Like, if I move back, would I have the relationship with them I thought I would have or that I had before I left? Or I don't know. I feel a little bit conflicted about it as well. But as I get a little bit older, I'm able to let it go a little bit more. But I don't know if we said, like, oh, we're moving back, we're moving to this city, and I'd say, oh, well, these are all the people I know in this city. I don't know whether I'd have the same connections with them that I thought I'd have. I'm not really sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And you do change fundamentally as well. Do you know, you become very, you know, you can have very different outlooks. You know, it's been 18 years for me now. So there's, I'm sure I see things very differently, and I'm sure they do. And I'm sure in that 18 years, people have a perceived idea of who I am now. I think, you know, and this is all for another podcast, I'm sure, but that whole thing about money, I'm sure that people think that all expats are just rolling in cash, you know, because we're living this incredible existence, which is definitely not the case at our house, because we're just trying to, you know, keep afloat with kids at school and, you know, the whole process of going back and forth and all the rest of it. I'm sure everybody has these conversations at this time of their life as well, maybe too, Nikki. You know, like our children, we don't have little tiny children anymore where we're having those day-to-day connections with other people with little tiny children. So I think, you know, where you're just, the things you have in common is that your children are small together, and so it bonds you together.
Yeah, but then you grow friendships out of that as well, though, that are separate to your children. But the children give you the excuse for the interaction.
Yes.
I found that here. So I don't have kids that go on play dates anymore where I go to. So it's, and then I look at the people around me that still have those relationships, and I think they just can bond more quickly with people because they have that more face-to-face time, you know. So it's not like, oh, you know, we must catch up, or, you know, see you for 10 minutes at school drop off or something like that. It's this extra time that they're having, or, you know, meet for coffee. You've got to make additional time in your life that's not about your kids. So I've still got activities that I have to do for my kids, and they still take up a lot of my outside of school time. Then I have to make additional time, which I'm happy to make. But if you've got little kids and you're already making that time for something else, you know, I don't know. I'm thinking, I see exactly what you're saying, and I really feel that the way I'm entering my friendships is changing as well, which is
completely
tricky.
Yeah, completely the way you enter changes. Yeah, I had, you know, four little tiny people that I traipsed from country to country, and yes, it was so simple to go to the toddler group or the school meeting or the whatever. Now my kids are still, they're still very busy socially, but you're right, you don't have to go along. You drop them off, you pick them up, and yes, you have these hi Susan at the door sort of thing, but you're not going to sit there with Susan over a cup of coffee cleaning up mess and complaining about how little sleep you've had, or, you know, the mess that you had or whatever, you know, where you're having that mutual sort of thing. Yeah. I think going back, because I always think it's good to try and not have a solution to a problem, but while we're talking about different expat issues, I guess for me, if I really thought about this and the whole thing about the important people that you have to make time for and other people that make no effort, it goes back to that whole planning. What I probably should have done before I came home was made dates to see certain people and at events that I was keen to go to, you know, so you kill two birds with one stone. So you do that whole, you know, I should know better than this after 18 years of travel, but you do that thing where you go to the one place and you say, we're going to be here, why don't you all come and see me? Or, do you know, like make that date where you see someone so you make sure that that happens. And, yeah, I guess I could be completely clear and free of any worry of whether I've made more effort than someone else if I'd done that, if I just said, hey, I'm going to be at this place every Monday at, you know, 8 o'clock, come along for a coffee or do whatever. And then it was just open and free and I wouldn't feel like I was chasing anyone or they – if they didn't want to see me, well, then it would be clear by the end of the trip, wouldn't it, that they never came, they never made the effort, and then you're not worried about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's, for me, the other thing is I have to worry more about what I think and what effort I make. So when I see other people do that and they have a good relationship, I think that's great they're having that relationship. I need to worry about my relationship, not theirs.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Okay, technically expat. Nikki, what's your big tech tip this time?
Oh, well, my tech tip recently has come from my 11-year-old daughter, mm-hmm. who said, Mum, I need to put WhatsApp on my computer. And I said, no, you can't do that. WhatsApp is associated with the phone number. No, my friend Mia has it, so I must be able to do it. So went to Google and life-changing.
Yeah. Now, I don't know how I knew to do it because I didn't have your lovely Willow telling me to do it. And I'm pretty sure none of my children did. I wonder if my phone actually told me to do it. I'm thinking that WhatsApp may have told me to do it, but we also do that. We are a big – do you have a family WhatsApp chat?
We do have a family WhatsApp chat and my family hates me whenever I post something to it.
Yes.
They're not happy.
Yes, I'm about to have a sit-down meeting about our WhatsApp family channel because I feel so sad for my husband because he's a huge contributor. To give you an example, today he is planting a garden bed in Qatar. So it kicked off with him outside showing you where he was going to plant it. You know, here's a photo of where I'm going to plant the garden bed. Then a little chat about what he was going to do there. Do you think one child commented on the garden bed? So then he did a photo of how far he'd got. Then he did a photo of when he was done with that. Then he took a selfie of him with his shirt off next to the garden bed to show you that he'd actually done all the hard work to get it happening. I just wrote, I really hope you've got pants on because you could see that it was topless. And then I think I wrote, I think you're going to need a bigger garden bed to sustain a second income. But meanwhile, you can just feel the eye roll, the collective eye roll of our children, as you know that they've all got devices in their hands and they're all watching it, but no one is discussing. But what I plan to do is sit down with the children to explain why, as an expat family, that WhatsApp chat is so important. Do you know, it is because when we do all talk, and it does happen where we have moments where we all talk, and it's a beautiful thing, do you know, just sort of everybody shows what they've had for breakfast or everybody talks about where they're off to or what they're doing, or there'll be some of us in one place together and some of us in another, and it really does keep us really well connected. And I think because kids don't know, I don't think, why it's so important that you keep that daily chat going.
Yeah, I think my most popular post to our family chat was when I posted that the wasp man had come to address the wasp nest that's in the outside of my study window so we wouldn't have wasps in our house. And I got a lot of good feedback on that.
Okay, so my tech tip, which was one that I just discovered before I came home for the holidays and I was mad into watching the footy, is I'm a big Australian rules football watcher, and I used to watch it on my laptop and then ping it onto the telly through screen mirroring. I have an Apple Mac, and so I would ping it onto the telly. We have an Apple TV. And then I saw in a chat room somewhere where someone said, no, you ping it straight from the app. It's a much better quality of vision, and you don't have the kind of fuzzing. I don't know the technical term, but, you know, it is a much stronger signal. So, and they were absolutely right. If I put it on my phone and pinged it from my phone, it was a gazillion times better just pinging it straight from the app. So I imagine that works for either your iPad or your phone, pinging it. But what has happened over the summer is, while I have been here in Australia, Uncle Andrew, my husband's brother, has done a trip to Qatar, obviously had a look at our tech situation with televisions and whatever, and gone, you guys just aren't doing this right. They are, my brother-in-law is an expat in Hong Kong. Hello to Andrew and Nicole in Hong Kong. And he has gone out with my husband, purchased new televisions, and we now, the children tell me, because my two boys have gone back to Qatar ahead of me, they tell me that they can now watch television when they sit down. It's like they're sitting in the lounge room in Australia.
Oh, so what does that mean? So that they're...
I gather it's a smart TV, and so I think through things like, so apologies to our North American friends. So like we have in Australia, you know, much the same, Channel 7, Channel 10, Channel 9, whatever. And I gather they're watching it through 10Play, which is the app, you know, for Channel 10 in Australia, and 7 Plus and 9 Now and ABC iView and whatever. All of those things are up on the television. And then, so my little guy is like coming home and watching Survivor, and it's clear and perfect and beautiful up on the telly.
Yeah, so your VPN goes through the telly.
Yeah, and we weren't doing that before. For me, it was all very much done through the laptop. Now, I have one more question that I would like to put out to people, and also to you, Nikki. Maybe this has happened to you. But we've had a hard drive in our safe, which is here in Australia, you know, which was from a computer that I had years ago. And that hard drive has sat in the safe happily and safely, pardon the pun, forever. My daughter asked for a baby photo the other day, and I thought, oh, I'll get a really good one, you know, from the original source. I've pulled out the hard drive, plugged it into the computer, and it just goes click, 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 and it doesn't come up on my in my Finder as another device. I'm wondering if there's anyone out there that's ever had a broken hard drive. Please tell me you got it fixed, or please tell me what the solution is. Nikki, have you ever had this? Because I feel zero pity for people when they tell me they haven't backed up their computer and they've lost all their photos. But when you've backed up everything religiously onto hard drives and then the hard drive doesn't work, what do you do?
No, so that's what I was just going to check. This isn't some sort of internal thing from an old computer. This is actually like a dedicated hard drive that you're meant to use to back things up onto, so you can put it into a computer. Yeah, I've got one of those too, and now I'm never going to plug it in because you just told me that.
Well, I think you've got to do two hard drives, maybe. Is that the answer, that you keep two separate hard drives? Because this, you know, these photos are the original. This, we're talking, I had that computer. It was an old Dell computer in Jakarta and in Kuala Lumpur and in Libya before it was gone. So
my question is, when I first was using a hard drive to back up my computer several years ago, I remember that I had to partition it and divide it because it was trying to work with a Dell, and I was using an Apple. So like a PC versus Mac. So there was something to do with that, and I had to make changes to it for that purpose. Is it because, have you used it before on an Apple product successfully? Yeah, is my first question.
That's a great question. I would have thought so, but maybe I haven't. Maybe that's it. This a hard drive. Are you telling me that a hard drive has a preference for who it talks to?
Yes, that's why Apple sells its own special hard drive. It's whatever it's called.
Box
or whatever.
Yeah. We've got one of those, a time hop.
Time machine.
That's right. We've got one of those in Qatar. But no, I have used other, you know, inferior hard drives, you know, external hard drive, I think is the word we're looking for, isn't it?
Yes,
I have used other external hard drives with Macs and they've been fine. But I guess the thing we have to think about is that this hard drive would be old. It would be 2004, maybe. So, because you're going to think that's when that computer would have died. So,
I just know that somebody who is way more tech savvy than us, even though we think we're sometimes a little bit tech savvy, is yelling at their phone right now saying, this is what you have to do. Yes. So maybe they could drop us a line.
Yes. So now while we're on that, how you do drop us a line, and anyone who is listening, please head on over to our website, twofatexpats.com. And you will see we've got a little speak pipe there, a little microphone. You can leave us a message by clicking on the microphone. It is as easy as leaving a voicemail. But please come and talk to me and tell me. Otherwise, hop on our Facebook group, Two Fat Expats, or shoot us an email. Expat money. Money, money, money. Nikki, what do you think is going to happen with interest rates?
You know what? And I don't know the answer to that. The only, and I don't take a big interest in that, and that is not the world's best answer. But I know that in different countries, I have different interest rates on different amounts, and I know what they are at any given time, what we owe and what we're invested, but I don't necessarily know the other thing. So, Kirsty, what do you think is going to happen in interest rates? And tell me why I should be more informed.
Well, mine is, I should have probably been clearer. Mine is more on my mortgage. So we have a mortgage here in Australia, and interest rates in Australia range on mortgages, you know, so if you've got a really good one, you're on sort of 2 point whatever. And if you've maybe not, you're on about 4 point whatever. And what I'm interested in is interest rates on mortgages have just risen just this week. Now, those of us, and I didn't live it, this was when I was a child, but interest rates in the 80s when Australia had what was known as the recession they had to have were double digits. You know, I think people said interest rates on mortgages got up to 17 and 18%, which terrifies me, right, because I just think, holy moly, imagine if it got to that when you're on a 3% interest rate at the moment. But I have a variable interest rate, and I'm really interested, and I will talk to my boss about this, is about whether it would be best to consider, with the economic market how it is at the moment, going to a fixed interest rate. And I think the things that happen when you go to a fixed interest rate is you pay a fee to change from variable to fixed. And I think you have to lock in for a certain amount of time. And the other option you can do is you can maybe fix part of your mortgage amount and keep part of it variable. So if you want to hedge your bets, to do both. But I'd be interested to hear what other expats are thinking that may have mortgages and what they're thinking in other countries as well, because I'm sort of looking at going, is this the start? Because people are saying that we are going to have a, you know, economic downturn. Now, my mother raised an interesting point this morning when I was talking to her about it, and she said, well, yes, that could happen when they rise and get to that point. She said, but if it's really, really bad, if there is going to be a depression, which is where she's heading with her happy, happy thoughts, she said they won't, because no one will be borrowing money and they'll want to keep you borrowing money, so it won't happen. But I was just interested in that. And my other question I was going to ask is, whether people also have a percentage of their wage that they try and save. Like, do people have a set percentage that they try and save, or do they just go luck of the draw, or how they do it. And I guess if you do, you're using something to track your spending, which was my final question. And so my thing that I wanted to talk to you about, Nikki, was I had seen and heard expats that were speaking about an app called PocketSmith, and they were swearing by this app called PocketSmith, which you can track your spending. And it, the reason they were saying it was particularly good for expats was because it spoke in different currencies. So you could be in one country tracking one currency and be in another, and it had the ability to look at both currencies and be able to do that for you, which I thought sounded fabulous. Is that something you do? Do you guys track your spending down to the cent?
Well, we did for a while, and when we changed countries, I stopped that because I didn't keep using the app because I didn't put it into a new currency and country. But I have recently been looking at starting that up again, and I am interested in the app that you're talking about, because now we have active bank accounts in more than one country and we need to worry a little bit more about how they are working. So I'd be really interested in doing that. In the past, I've used You Need a Budget, YNAB, which is one of the favorite ones of the North American market. But I never had live bank feeds, which my friends always used to say, well, why are you using it if it's not, you know, your ATM things aren't coming in and you can't assign them. But anyway, it's what I started with. So once you do it, it's usually quite a bit of work to do all the setup and, you know, set up your budget and everything. But it's better to know where your money's going, I think, and rather than the black hole and then go to the end of the month and go, oh, cool, yeah, we've still got X dollars. Yay.
Well, you know, I work for a guy called the Barefoot Investor. Yes. And this is very much his caper and not mine. But he is very big on that the way that he and his wife do it is they only, you know, everything gets divided into its, you know, the splurge, the saves, the, you know, they have their different buckets and whatever. But he and his wife have a deal that unless either of one of them wants to spend more than $400, that's when they make a phone call to say, hey, I want to buy this or I want to spend this. Other than that, they just go about their merry way. Now, my husband is not keen on PocketSmith because he said he doesn't really want to be. And my husband, I should clarify, is very good with his money and very good at banking and tracking and watching. So I thought he would go, yes, this is perfect. And he said, no, I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be looking at every cent that is spent and be niggling about, oh my God, you caught a taxi for $60? You know, like you could have gotten a train and, oh my gosh, you spent how much at you know, getting your lunch at whatever? He said, I don't want to be those people. And I wasn't even thinking about it that way. I was just thinking, oh, wouldn't it be really neat to sort of be able to see exactly, you know, where you were at all points of the time? And he's like, no, I like it more fluid. I'm still campaigning hard for PocketSmith, and I'm that's one thing I'll be talking to him about when I get back and we're sort of, you know, back together and back doing our normal thing, because that's the other thing. Every time I kept thinking of campaigning hard when I was here, I would remember the fact that I was on holidays and did I really want to go back in the previous week and look carefully at how I'd spent my money, and possibly not.
I think for us, when we've done it before, sometimes it's been quite helpful just to see like how much you spend on food a month. I guessed how much I spent on food a month, and then when I started to track it, it was actually different. And, you know, so those things that you just sort of guess, well, this is how much this costs a month, whatever, I think it's, for me, I found it useful to sort of track everything for 3 to 4 months and then just see how it all averaged out. And then, you know, things that you don't think you spend money on that you actually do, and that's okay. It's just acknowledging that that's something you spend money on. That's how it works
yeah,
for me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Nikki, tell me, how are you screwing up your expat child this week? Or even better, how is someone else screwing up their expat child that you read about and noticed?
Well, I'm doing it all myself this week. This week I went to back to school night, which I think is awesome because, you know, the principal gives a little commentary and then all the teachers have to stand by their assigned columns in the lobby with their glass of wine thinking, oh my God, what parent's going to come and talk to me now? And so I think you've really got a great opportunity then to really set the scene for your child in the school years. So go hard or go home. What my children are worried about is where they have the same teacher. So now they're both in what's considered the senior school, and there are some teachers that they have at the same. So they are both desperately worried that their teachers won't think they're like the other one, which I think is hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My youngest child, who is, you know, the fourth child through that school, told me that his science teacher read out his name, said his last name, and actually sighed out loud, like, oh. And she's from the South, so it was this, oh, my, another one. And he's a really good kid at school, so he was like, great. Anyway, continue. Sorry, I butted in.
Oh, no, that's it. That's really it. So I am, and then we've had a move to the senior school. So this is the first year for us. It's sort of senior slash middle school, depending on, you know, where you come from and how you look at it. But this is the first year of, you know, moving classrooms, moving teachers, you know, a change of location within the school. You know, she's had a change of friends, a change in, you know, hormones. Everything's going on. It's awesome.
Yeah. Do you know, on that middle school thing and a change in classes, hormones, et cetera, there was a fantastic podcast episode, and I always refer people to it because I think I listened to it right when my first child was becoming a middle schooler, and it's a This American Life episode, and I think it is just called simply Middle School. I'll try and hunt it down and we'll put a link in our show notes or on the website. And it was a really good, because I think I haven't, middle school wasn't a thing when I was at school in Australia. It is becoming more of a thing now where schools are breaking up into middle schools. But in Australia, you tend to do primary school, which is elementary school from, you know, grade one to grade seven, and then you go to high school. So there's not this middle school thing, whereas now there are a few more around the place. But this episode of This American Life just showed you why it was just such a hard place to hang out, that it really is this muddling time where kids are working out who they are and they're highly hormonal. And by the time they get to high school, they've really come to terms with, okay, who they are, where they are, what they are. But middle school is just this melting pot of, I don't know. You know, I don't know how this works. I don't know what this is, and this is nowhere near as much fun as it was in elementary school. It all suddenly got super serious, and there aren't as many monkey bars to climb on, and they're playing different games, and we're doing a lot more hanging out and just talking. And yeah, you know, it was just a fantastic episode. And I think if anyone has a middle schooler or is about to have a middle schooler, it is well worth the listen. But yeah, I was thinking about this, Nikki, because I remember my eldest was this super organized and capable child, and getting to middle school and doing that whole moving from class to class to class to class really flipped her out. And it wasn't until, and I don't know if you've done this, Nikki, they do a thing at our school where you go and you have their schedule and you go from class to class to class. Have you done that, where you've got to find room 2306? And then you've got to find room 3204, and then suddenly you're over in the gym, and then suddenly you're over in the music, and you think, oh, my gosh, how do they actually get from here to here within that certain amount of time? And you suddenly have this whole new appreciation for how crazy their day is and what they're trying to do, and how it must be a nightmare if you forget your homework or forget your saxophone or, you know, trying to get from A to B. But I was going to say, imagine on top of that, that you are trying to work out, you know, you're brand new to a country and you are a brand new kid at a brand new kid to the country, brand new to the school. Those poor expat kids that move at that time in their life, that's like hats off to you.
I know. And imagine that you're brand new to the language.
Okay, location, location, location. H, and I'm guessing it would have to be Hong Kong.
Oh, really? If you must know me well, Kirsty. Yes, there was never going to be any other place. So I spoke to Rachel, who has been an expat for 21 years and lived in Hong Kong for quite a lot of those years. She's currently just moving back to Australia, and her family's was split when I spoke to her. So one kid and one adult in Hong Kong, and one adult and two kids in Australia. But I talked to her about, of course, the Fat Five of Hong Kong. So we should have a quick listen.
So this would be interesting because now you've actually left, but half your family's still there. So it's on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your current level of in love with Hong Kong?
Do you know, I do love Hong Kong. I would say that it's a 7, even though I'm here, because it's just, it's a great place and we love it. It just felt like the right time to go, if that makes sense.
Yeah. What was your best local find?
Oh, I would say that the wet markets were a good local find, and my favourite ones are probably the Chifu wet markets.
What did you buy? What were your regular? What was your shopping list?
I would usually go in there for vegetables and dumpling wrappers and freshly made noodles. They're probably staples that I picked up there that were difficult to get anywhere else. You know, they have specific Chinese vegetables because I love cooking, and so I would go and buy special vegetables that I would then turn into dumplings for the kids. Or sometimes I would go in, take in the ingredients and do pot sticker dumplings with the kids as a cooking class in primary school.
That's fantastic. I never learned to do that. I only learned to buy them frozen in the supermarket. Good job. What drives you crazy
about Hong Kong?
Mm-hmm.
Or the personal space thing?
Yeah. Can you explain that to other people?
Yes. So I suppose growing up in a small country town with plenty of space, everybody is kind of a bit more observant of their proximity to other people. And nobody likes to come inside the personal space of other people unless they know them really well. Whereas in Hong Kong, your personal space isn't even as big as your body space. When you are on a train and it's peak hour, your personal space is zero. And when you're in a lift, whether it's peak hour or not, your personal space is still zero.
What I used to love most about Hong Kong was that the only button in the lift that ever ran out of, you know, you couldn't see what it was anymore, was the lift closing button. Because yes, people would get in the lift and immediately turn around and press it.
The first button they press is lift close. They don't care who's behind them. They just press lift close. And when you're traveling with kids and you've got a pram and two toddlers with you, it's disastrous.
What's one place you'd love to live?
Oh, I would love to go and live in Dublin again. Oh, I lived there when I was young, free and single, and was working for a software company. And that would have to be, 17 years ago or something like that. But I would drop everything to go back.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given about your expat life or being an expat?
Always go shopping in a local market. Always make an effort to speak the local lingo and bargain.
How is your Cantonese?
It's best described as taxi Cantonese.
Oh, that's what I call mine.
Yeah. You can hail a taxi. You can ask it to stop. You can ask it to go straight ahead, left or right. You can order what you want in a Chinese restaurant without embarrassing yourself. And you can say the relevant numbers in a local wet market.
Very good. And what do you think is the biggest lesson you've learned? Which is probably, I don't know whether you've been thinking about this, but you've been away for 21 years. So now you're sort of like, can really sit back and think about these kinds of things.
I would say leave well. And that was something that I struggled to come to terms with when I left the UK and Europe, because I thought I was just leaving for a little while and we'd be back. And I never really got to say goodbye to places and people that I really wanted to in the way that I wanted to. And then leaving Hong Kong, I think we made much more of an effort to make goodbye meaningful for us and the kids in a way that is going to stay with them. You know, having a book that they can always go back to, having a way to stay in contact with friends, which is probably a lot easier now with FaceTime and Skype and emails and things like that. And I think kids are becoming much more technology literate and much more willing to use it to stay in contact with their friends, where if you or I moved when we were younger, we certainly wouldn't have said to our mum and dad, oh, can I have a FaceTime with my six-year-old friend that I left behind? So there's more ways to stay in contact for us and for our kids, and it's great to take advantage of it.
Oh, that was fantastic. Can I just say, Nikki, a big shout out to Rachel Tandy, because she has been, I feel like she's been along the journey with me online throughout for years, and it was just so nice to hear her voice and, you know, be able to hear her story. You know, so often when you're posting blogs and talking on podcasts, you feel like you're just blah on everyone else. It's so lovely to hear her and what she said. But so whereabouts is she now?
So she's in Perth now. And in fact, right now, because I recorded this before the summer break, she and her family are on a 6-month round Australia in a caravan trip. And they have the most amazing Instagram account, which I will add on here, which is Glass Jar Kitchen. And they are just having the best experiences and really great time.
Now, I wanted to say that whole leave well is my favorite thing, and I think that is the best advice ever. I think everybody has somewhere that they didn't leave well from and is still almost mourning the loss of it. Mine is Libya, because I went home for Christmas. We got transferred in the time that I was home. I had 3 children under 4, so I never went back there, and I still am connected to it in an unhealthy way, because I never did the walk through, I never did the goodbye, I never had those moments where I actually properly left. And I think leaving well is something that all expats need to learn.
Absolutely. It's a skill. Yeah. Leave well. Put it in the expat toolkit.
All right. Now, Nikki, you and I are going to have to whiz through this next bit, because I have a taxi coming in about 10 minutes and I'm not dressed or ready to go. So tell me, books, what have you been reading?
Well, I know that you know that I'm not a big hard book reader anymore, but I've changed my life, Kirsty, and I've dedicated 30 minutes a day to reading actual paper and bark.
What a brilliant thing to do.
Yeah.
When are those 30 minutes a day? Is it an in-bed night thing, or is it a sit in the park and read? Like, what do those 30 minutes look like?
Well, they're different. So they're not at night, because I do a different thing to go to sleep. So I can't read to go to sleep because of my sleeping situation. So I do a different thing at night. But they're usually in the middle of the day. So
explain that better. You need to explain that to me. What is your sleeping situation? And dare I ask, what are you doing?
Well, I don't know. So my sleeping situation is the same probably as many couples, in that one likes to have a light on and one doesn't like to have a light on, and one can't sleep if there's any light or sound, and one can sleep if there's light or sound. So the person that likes to have the light and can sleep with light or sound is, of course, me. And my husband can't sleep if there is any light or any sound. So if I'm doing it, or movement. So if I'm doing any of those things, then I have to be outside the bedroom. And so to go to sleep at night when my mind is racing, sometimes I can just get into bed and go to sleep. But when I can't, I listen to a podcast in my earbuds. So that's how I go to sleep.
Yeah, I do like the earbuds and the listening, but then I hate waking up with my earbuds in.
True that.
All right, so the book you're reading?
The book I'm reading and just finished is The Dry by Jane Harper. I know if you're Australian, I'm very late to the party, but I've really enjoyed it. It takes me home. It's got a rural theme. It's all about drought, which Australia is sadly going through now. So I'm really enjoying the connection that I'm feeling back with my home country.
Well, there's only been one book in my life for the past few months, and that's been my boss's second book, which comes out on September the 24th, The Barefoot Investors for Families. So he wrote the best-selling book in Australia a couple of years ago, and has, you know, I guess, been number one for the last year. And would you believe he put out the pre-release of this book that still isn't on the shelf yet? It comes out on, like I said, September 24th, and it's already number six on the bestseller list just through pre-orders, which is crazy. But it's been a fantastic experience watching someone write their second book and just being able to sort of read bits and pieces and see the process and watch what that looks like. You know, as an onlooker, I have nothing to do with the writing of it, but just, you know, reading little bits and pieces here is a treat. So that's been it for me. So with books, but I am back to book group when I get home, and I'll be talking about books then. So with television, I'm just going to be quick. I was going to talk about a particular episode of Four Corners called I Am That Girl, and I watched it a couple of months ago now, but it was a great episode on a particular court case where two really lovely young women went out and had too much to drink, and one of them was raped in a back alley of a nightclub. And it was a really interesting case in Australia of sexual consent where the now, I don't know if I have to call him an alleged rapist or whether she was allegedly raped now, because the court case, it went back to court, like he was convicted, but then he was let go. But it's a really interesting look, I guess maybe because I have an 18-year-old daughter and a 16-year-old daughter as well as two boys. But it, for me, it was a really interesting episode on sexual consent. And I also thought the woman was amazing who agreed to be interviewed because she showed her face, she spoke openly, her sister spoke openly, the girl who was out with her spoke openly. You know, usually, I guess what I'm trying to say is usually so much is hidden where, you know, people feel so much shame and they want to protect themselves for their careers and their future families, etc. Whereas this woman was so brave to come out and talk. So it was called I Am That Girl. But I can just say ABC iView, if you have any interest in Australian politics or what's going on in Australia at the moment, watching Four Corners, an Australian story at the moment, is just brilliant, and there's some fantastic episodes there. Nikki, what are you watching on the telly?
Telly, a lot of Netflix over the summer. And I don't know if you, I know you've watched one of these, I think, the BuzzFeed series. There's a BuzzFeed series on Netflix called Follow This, and it's a series, they're 18-minute sort of mini documentaries, and they cover some really interesting stuff. And Vox has one as well called Vox Explain, and it has another series of really interesting topics, and they're also 18 minutes long. So 18 minutes must be the average family viewing time if you can all watch together. Because I've watched some of those with my kids. It's been quite interesting. You know, there's one about intersex, one about safe injecting rooms, men's rights, etc. So I've enjoyed those on the telly.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Podcasts.
Well, the last recommendation I ever gave for a podcast was immediately cancelled the week after, which was I'm feeling a little bit gun-shy on my podcast recommendation, but I will say if you know anything about podcasts, you will know that Serial Season 3 is coming soon, so I'm excited about that. I didn't love Season 2, but I'm ready for Season 3 to go back, give it a go. What about you? Any podcasts?
Well, you know, I have to admit it that during the football season I become completely obsessed, and we are nearly at the end. We're at finals time now, but and that's why I'm about to hop in a cab. I'm about to go and meet some friends, and we're going to watch a footy game together. But my team is out. But through the football season, I listen to so many football podcasts. I have had so many friends this holiday say that I need a career change, that I need to move into football commentating of some type because all of this information needs to go somewhere, because I just and I've thought about it, Nikki. I reckon I'm probably getting in about 25 hours of football information a week.
Yes, I would say that I do the same amount of hours of politics.
Yeah.
Politics podcasts for me am I stuck in. Yeah.
And if people think that sounds out of control, because I listen to a particular radio station's podcast where it is just a sports radio station, So I'll listen to that where I'll kick off in the morning. I'll listen to it in the shower. I'll listen to it while I'm having breakfast. I'll listen to it while I'm driving, you know, a child to school. I have a 45-minute drive to get the girls to school when I'm here in Australia, and then I've got that 45 minutes home. Then I'll go for a walk on the beach and I'll listen to it. I listen to, like you, we're both people that always have one ear pod in an ear while we're shopping, while we're, you know, walking the streets, while we're doing whatever. And so, yeah, I kind of did the math the other day and thought, now, Kirsty, if you're listening to Gary and Tim on SEN and then you're listening to Crawford and Heard for their hour that they give you every week, and then you're listening to 5AA with Rowan and Bix, and then you're listening to Cornsey and Malcolm Blight for their hour, and then I sort of added it all up and thought, oh dear, that's a lot of time. Anyway, I will be devoting it to other podcasts soon. Movies, what have you done?
Well, I did a very sneaky thing and I snuck to the cinema by myself the other day on a school day after school went back. So I saw, it was me and six people in the cinema, and I saw Crazy Rich Asians, which, very good, feel-good rom-com, loved it. But I loved more that I was at the movies by myself with my own little popcorn.
Nikki, I'm going to cut this short. I know usually we do a great expat tip, but we'll do that next week. And usually about this time we ask you to hop on iTunes and rate us or review us. So please go and do that or share us with your friends as well. But I have to go because I've got to get changed and get in the cab. So I am going to catch you this week when I'm back in Qatar, and we will head into our 100th episode.
And just before you go, I'm going to tell you that our family WhatsApp chat has just blown up because my husband's on a plane to America and the lady beside him has just taken her shoes off, and he sent us a photo and he says it smells like farts. So there we go.
Okay, so 100th episode next week. I'm going to talk to the lovely Sarah Derrick before I do, so you can catch up on what she's up to and where she's moved to, and what she's going to do next, what her next steps will be. And Nikki, I'll see you next time.
I'll talk to you then. Have fun at the footy.
I will. Bye.
Bye.